Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back to another episode of Millennial Money, and we got a special guest today. We got Andre Jick.
Hey guys, what's up? I'm Andre. Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate this.
You're welcome. Well, no, just kidding. But Andre's not able to make it today, but we will be able to call him shortly to get his thoughts on Bitcoin just crashing. Ooh. And we also got a lot of crypto crashing. In fact, UST. Have you heard of this?
Yep.
Terra Luna.
Yep.
Jerry, have you seen?
I've seen it, but I haven't looked into it enough to understand it.
The not so stable stablecoin.
Hey, right.
Has run its course.
It's bad. I don't fully understand the complexities with exactly how it works, but UST is supposed to be a stable coin, so its value is pegged 1-to-1 to the US dollar. So you buy in a dollar, should always be worth a dollar.
Kind of like Tether.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, when Bitcoin began to decline, the other currency pegged to it, Terra Luna, plummeted, and the stable coin value went as low as 67 cents. So you have a $1 stable coin that within 24 hours plummeted to 67 cents. Right now it's like 93 cents, 94 cents. Oh, it's still not pegged back to the dollar. Now, some people have called it a Ponzi because basically when you buy in $1 UST, you're getting a portion of their Terra Luna cryptocurrency that's supposed to buy enough of it to bring the price back up to a dollar. So it's always stable.
Okay.
I don't get how it works, but it's like this algorithm that's supposed to be keeping it at a dollar, and that has failed.
Wow, that's insane. And so the theory is, I guess, they're selling off Bitcoin to somehow make up the difference to get it back to a dollar.
I think they hold reserves in Bitcoin. I've spent 10 minutes looking into this, so I am missing a lot of the details, so we could call Andre with it shortly.
Okay.
But my understanding is they had Bitcoins in reserves, I think 37,000 Bitcoin that they had to sell just to help recover some of the price, and that put a lot of downward pressure on Bitcoin.
Wow.
I can't see how these just aren't Ponzi's. I mean, let's be real here. the whole stablecoin, I'm sure there's some legit ones, like I think USDC, people are pretty happy about. I don't use any of them.
Until when, though, right? Like the T one, it already broke, right?
Yeah, that one broke.
So isn't it just a matter of time until the other ones do too?
Well,
and I feel like also to see one that was as prominent as that, because that was like the 11th biggest market cap cryptocurrency. If that can fail, I feel like that just puts a lot of fear in the other people that are holding the other stable coins. And what if they all sell and put selling pressure on it?
Two differences. One main difference. This one, UST, is an algorithm stable coin. So it's an algorithm that keeps the price at a dollar and pegged to that. Mm-hmm. The other ones are backed by reserves, allegedly. Mm-hmm. But we have no idea what those reserves are. But those, so it's like an algorithm or reserves that, who knows what it is. I think the whole thing is just probably illegitimate.
Wow.
Probably all, you know, but people have been saying that for years about Tether. And
yeah.
No. Could last a long time. I don't know.
Yeah, let me ask you this, because you feel, it sounds like you're a little aggressive against kind of your feelings on this. And you mentioned Ponzi and things like that. With you having a significant amount of money in Bitcoin now, does this scare you at all?
I have like 7% in Bitcoin. It's probably like 6%. Not in the big picture. I mean, if it were to go to zero, it would suck, but I don't have enough where I would lose sleep over that.
Okay.
I mean, but losing 6% would be horrible, but it's, you know.
Yeah.
But the S&P is down 50 to 15%. I'm not, like, losing it over that. So it's what's another 6? What's another 6? No, really. If it's down, if I lose 6% of my portfolio because Bitcoin goes to zero,
okay.
Oh, well.
Okay. Know? So, but I think other people are kind of concerned, like, if Bitcoin goes to, I mean, zero is a lot.
I don't think
lot,
it's going
right?
to go to zero. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like 15K or 20K or something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, are you a bigger buyer if that situation kind of
I bought more. I've certainly been, I dollar cost average into Bitcoin and Ethereum. But certainly when I see large drops, I'm more, likely to invest a little more. Whereas, you know, maybe in a normal circumstance, I'd throw like 5K in every now and then. Maybe this time it's like 8K.
Yeah. Now, Jack, do you have any money invested in Bitcoin?
Yeah, it's very quickly becoming less and less, but but yeah, I think I initially probably had like, I don't know, 8% of my portfolio in Bitcoin and Ethereum, just like half and half between the two.
Yeah.
But that's going down at a faster rate than everything else. So it's less than 8% now.
Yeah. The nutty thing is CNBC had a headline that said that 40% of cryptocurrency holders now were underwater.
Yeah.
40%. Yeah.
Well, see, and this is the interesting moment, and I think I brought this up in past episodes, the moment when people aren't making money and they're losing money, and how do people react in that scenario? Because it's so easy, as we all know, it's so easy when something's going up, everybody can hold it. It's like, oh, I make money. It's so easy. But when it starts going down and then you're underwater and you're down on that, can you still hold in that sort of market, right? And I think we're just going to find out, you know, who's really got the diamond hands and who's not.
Well, I think it's just don't invest so much where you put yourself in a position of just like financial hardship if that were to go down. That's why it's not a good. That's why nobody ever says go all in Bitcoin, Ethereum. This is it. Mm-hmm. It's better to keep that as a small part of your portfolio and just diversify.
One thing I was thinking about that I found kind of interesting is you have a lot of new investors in the market and they're doing the riskier stuff for sure. Like that's what's became popular. When they all lose a bunch of their money, do you think that they have the level of education and investing to like go back to the basic investing principles and invest in index funds? Or do you think that they're going to be scared away and then just no longer be investors?
Ooh, that's a good question.
A lot of Gen Z.
Yeah, I think you're going to get a little mixture of both. What we do know is every single time you have like a crash scenario, bear market, you have a certain amount of folks that just move to the safest side possible. And they're like, I shouldn't have been doing that. And so naturally, it seems like everybody wants to go to the safer side. And then those folks also guide like the next generation of investors. Hey, this is the way you got to do it. You know, just invest in index funds. Like right now, it's huge movement toward index funds, right? Because index funds look pretty darn good, right? At least they've held up pretty well compared to a lot of stocks. Like for instance, Upstart stock fell 55% yesterday. I was looking at this other stock, 61% down in a day. Like that's insane, right? And so there was a huge movement toward the riskier assets, Bitcoin, growth stocks, things like that. Now there's this kind of reversion to, oh, you should be in index funds, you know, and that's going to play out like that. But the interesting thing is, you know, you look at 07 through 09, index funds were not safe. You know, all those fell 50%+ when it was all said and done. I think the Russell was down like 60%. S&P 500 was down like 54%. So it's a little, I would say, don't throw stones because, you know, eventually.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it was like 40, fall. I think it was
41%. No. Oh, in 07, 09?
Yeah.
At the trough, it was over 54%. Yep, and the Russell was like 60% from peak to trough.
Sure.
So peak of summer 07 to the trough of, I think, March of 2009.
Sure.
So I have the specific numbers if you guys want me to.
You know what the funny thing is? I have the specific numbers in my phone.
Okay.
But I'm confusing it with something else. I think it was like 56%.
Okay. Yeah. Well, the March of 2021, I think that was 35%, 22 trading days or something like that. That was pretty intense. But so naturally, some folks will go back to being safe, right? Because a lot of people have been hurt. Options, oh my gosh. You know, Wall Street Bets, that whole movement. The option people have gotten decimated. I mean, absolutely decimated. Like, you know, 99% down. You know, because they went heavy, put like, let's say they have $40,000 in their account. They put that in 2021 into all these option plays that just haven't worked out. They're down 99%.
Yeah. But now I will say this, though. Very few people, like, I feel are going to be, in index funds at least, are going to be down 40%, even 50%. Because that would assume they bought in at the peak and then didn't make a single investment for the following year or two. Realistically, they're buying consistently on the way up. They're buying consistently on the way down. They're probably seeing a 20, 25, which is still a decent amount.
Yeah.
But I just feel like index funds are only more popular just because of social media and the whole investing craze throughout the last 4 years has just, I guess, given more access to people to make those decisions.
No, for sure. And there's a big question if index funds are the right way or wrong way. And obviously they look better in the grand scheme of things. But also, if you're just passively investing, is that necessarily a healthy thing? And that's a subject no one ever discusses, right?
I think it's, why wouldn't it be a healthy thing?
Well, think about it. Would you do that necessarily in real estate?
Yeah, you would buy a
REIT. You just buy any house?
You would buy a REIT. You're not, but that's the same thing as just picking a random stock. It would be like, imagine if I'm betting on the entire U.S. housing market.
Yeah.
Yeah, then absolutely.
Okay.
But if we're just like throwing a dart on a board and saying, I'm going to buy this one specific random house, then no. But to bet on the entire market as a whole, I do think is a good thing. The dangerous part, I think, would be voting rights. But then again, I don't know that many people who vote on stocks.
Yeah, the problem, though, is that money's not evenly distributed around when you invest passively. So this, imagine if you did this in the real estate market. Like, the money would go to, like, the 500 most expensive homes or something like that. And that money doesn't go to the other homes, or, you know. And so I don't know if that's healthy, because that just might cause those specific homes to get much more overvalued and the other ones to be much
But the other ones, like the small caps and the fintech companies, have been overvalued, which generally aren't included in the indexes.
But I would say as companies do better, they become more valuable, and the allocations are going to change over time. Yeah. So what might be number one right now could be number six in the future. Mm-hmm. Just like Netflix came up, it was like six, or it was in the top 10, and then it dropped back down. Now it's on like the second page of that. But you could also invest in equally weighted funds, which arguably, I think, are, when you look at equally weighted funds, they typically have more volatility, but they'll also have a slightly higher return.
Yeah. What's an equally weighted fund?
So, like, you know, for an index fund, the top, I think it's the top like 10 companies get like 30% of the investment.
Yeah.
Well, imagine you invest $100 and an equal amount of that goes to all the companies.
So there are 20 companies and it's 5% of each company or something.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So the math behind that is that the smaller companies have more upside for growth faster, but they're more risky. So you have a lot more volatility.
Yeah.
So short term, they go down a lot more, they go up a lot more.
Mm-hmm. I also think that passively being able to invest in something like an index fund brings it to available to people who don't really have an interest in it, but want to be invested. Because at the end of the day, I think the biggest thing is investing and getting into the game. So I think having that option for most people is probably more than okay.
That's a great point, Alex. Yeah, it's better to be invested than not invest in anything. So, and it's amazing how, like, you know, the market switches so quickly. So Cathie Wood, for instance, you know, was obviously beloved, and now the ARK fund's down like 75%.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're in a bear market, the stock picker, so one picking out individually stocks, get the hate, right? And it's like, see, that's why you don't stock pick right there. Look at that. Your stock just went down, da, da, da. The index is only down this. But then when you're in a bull market, everybody looks at the stock pickers and like, oh my gosh, they're so smart. Look at how much money they're making. They're killing the market and things like that. And I looked at ARK over the past 5 years, because Cathie Wood always talks about 5 years. And ARK has now underperformed the S&P 500 over the past 5 years. Which is intriguing, because, you know, she wants to always obviously be graded on a 5-year basis. And so to now be underperforming the S&P 500 over the last 5 years is obviously not a good look.
You know,
look.
It's also interesting. Berkshire Hathaway is outperforming the S&P again.
Yeah.
Throughout, what was it, 18, 19, 20, 21?
Yep.
Everyone said that he lost his edge. He was getting too old.
Yep.
And he missed out on tech stocks.
How much of those decisions for Berkshire Hathaway are really being made by him, though? I don't know.
That's a good
question. Not a smart guy. Yeah. I'm not very akin to this. But I feel like at that age, you know, like realistically, there should be some checks and balances of people making the executive decisions.
So at Berkshire, there's two gentlemen that run a lot of the money now. One's name's Todd. One is named Ted. Ted and Todd.
Todd and Ted.
Seriously.
Ted Todd.
And these guys run a lot of Berkshire's money in terms of the money that's invested in stocks. Now, Big Buffett's still making the big deals. So if there's like some $30 billion acquisition, he's the man behind that. Mm-hmm. He's still running that show, and that's what he's focused on, is trying to find the next huge deal. But as far as like the smaller investments, which smaller for them is like a $2 billion investment, he lets Todd and Ted, because that's not really worth his time. It's like, that's only $1 billion. It's like not even worth my time. So it's interesting kind of how they run their business. But you bring up a great point, Graham, because they were getting so much hate for a while there. It's like, oh, you know, he lost his touch and like, look at him. And now all of a sudden doing so well. And it just shows you, like, you know, these folks can be cast away, can be laughed at. And then all of a sudden a year or two later, they're heroes. Cathie Wood, for instance, she's like, you know, the one everybody makes fun of right now, right? Because she's getting killed. A year or two from now, she might be like, everybody might be like, wow, look at Cathie Wood. Look at the ARK fund. It's up 70% from the lows or whatever, you know, and it changes quick. That's the biggest thing I've noticed in the market. Things change quick.
It's going to take a lot to rebound that, though, and to get it to the point where it's above the S&P.
To go down 75% in order to get back to where you were, you need to go up like 500 or something ridiculous. I don't know, 300, 400, you know?
Almost. It's a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we could see prices come back to those levels anytime soon.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I mean, maybe. Because that's the thing is, I have no clue.
Yeah, and some
coin
of those,
toss on some of those stocks.
It's definitely dangerous. Remember the MSTR stock, the one Michael Saylor, who obviously got a really big name in the Bitcoin community because he's a Bitcoin bull. He leveraged up this company very heavily, MicroStrategy, with Bitcoin, right? And I even played the stock for a little amount of time when I wanted some Bitcoin exposure and then got out of it, thank goodness, because that stock's a disaster. And now they're over leveraged Bitcoin. Bitcoin keeps falling. That entire company could be in jeopardy of like going out of business and having to sell a massive amount of Bitcoin. And they own the most Bitcoin of anybody that's a public company.
I heard that. So it's, I think it's 20,000. I think if Bitcoin hit 21,000, they'd have to put up additional money.
That's what it was.
So they're not in any risk, but they did make it clear that if 21,000, they put additional collateral.
Ooh, okay.
That's what it was.
Yeah, I'm telling you, they don't have a lot of extra collateral at the company. Like the whole collateral is pretty much their Bitcoin position. So I don't know. That's where it gets into messy. And with crypto, here's the thing. And I think this is the craziest thing about crypto is FTX US, the sponsor of today's video. That's the craziest thing about crypto. We appreciate FTX for sponsoring today's video as always. No, what is it? 85% lower fees.
What is it?
Graham,
take it away.
On FTX.
What is it? What is it, Graham? 85% less than the top competitors?
Sam Bankman-Fried is the CEO. He donates 99% of what he personally makes to charities.
Wow, that's impressive.
Hold on. We should just call Andre right now.
Andre, you making any moves with Bitcoin being down? You buying or you just kind of holding?
So I'm still dollar cost averaging about $1,000 a day. But I know it's basically at Graham's cost basis around 30K. I think that's when you got in, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I'm not going to load the boat until we're probably in the 20s, which... I know people say that Bitcoin can't fall below its, you know, previous all-time high, but with crypto, never say never, and things could fall to insanely low levels. You just never know. So plan for the worst, I guess. And for me, I think I'm gonna buy a ton if we get into the 20s, and especially below 20, which we could definitely go. So I will say that. Did you mention FTX yet?
Oh, that's a good segue. All thanks to our sponsor, FTX US. For those not aware, FTX US is one of the largest cryptocurrency exchanges in the world in terms of daily users and trading volume, and they got a valuation of roughly $8 billion. Plus, their founder, Sam Bankman-Fried, has pledged to donate about 99% of his personal net worth to charities. Not to mention, they got a crypto debit card that's accepted throughout millions of merchants worldwide, and their fees are up to 85% lower than their top competitors.
FTX US is what we personally use for our crypto exchange. It is a crypto exchange we use for our portfolios. And keeping up with the news on FTX is absolutely amazing, which right now there's a lot of breaking news in regards to the whole entire crypto markets right now. And you use our referral code, which is MMFTX, you can get up to $100 in crypto free, which is pretty darn awesome.
And you get free crypto on every trade over $10.
So, guys, market has been awful. The NASDAQ, as of one point today, was down 27% year-to-date. Actually, I think it was 28% year-to-date. At one point today, the Russell 2000, down 30% from the highs it reached in November, which is a pretty darn dramatic drop in the indexes. S&P 500 held up decent. Mm-hmm. Dow has held up decent, mainly because oil and gas stocks, Apple, Microsoft have tried to been holding the show together. But I mean, the devastation out there is insane. You know, stocks like Shopify, Netflix, PayPal, like these are some of the most famous companies in the world, right? They can't find bottoms. You know, I've never personally seen a market like this other than March of 2020, but things came back so fast in that market that it was like in a snap of fingers, right? This has been just down and getting worse, and the story just gets worse over like 7 months since November.
I feel like this is normal, though. This is a normal bear market. When you look at most bear markets, they last, I don't know. What,
6 to 9 months about.
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, this could be a year, and I wouldn't be surprised if we go down 40%. I mean, that wouldn't shock me.
Yeah.
That would be on par. That would be on average with previous bear markets. So I don't see how this could be any different.
Yeah, so I mean, we had a little bit of a bear market in December of 2018. A bear market is usually considered like 20% drop on the indexes, and most people look at the S&P 500. So in December of 2018, we fell about 20% on the Dow, a little over 20% on the S&P, 23% on NASDAQ, and I think it was 27% on the Russell, okay, at the lows. Now, in March of 2020, a little worse than that, but that was a really quick drop, and we were right back up. And then if we go back prior to that, you really got to go back to the 07, 09. That was over 50% for all the indexes. But once again, that was a little different scenario. We almost lost the financial system. So I think a lot of people are trying to figure out right now, are we in an 07 through 09 where we're going to drop 50% on all the indexes? Or is this a little more along the lines of like a little more of a vicious like December of 2018 type crash?
2018 ended 2019 when the Fed decided to lower interest rates.
Yeah.
Under pressure from the president to lower interest rates to stimulate the economy. Yep. And they did.
Yep.
And everything just turned right back around very quickly.
Yeah.
So a lot of it's on the Fed. The Fed bailed out 2009 as well. The Fed interjected. And I mean, the housing market was decimated.
Yep.
But had they not done something, maybe it would have been a lot worse. We don't know. Yeah. At what point is the Fed going to take action, if any, and how low could this go? I mean, if we look back, what was it, 3,200 really before COVID? Somewhere around there. I mean, so a 35, 34 S&P would not be shocking to me. I'd be shocked if it went below 3, but I would also be just as, I could also see inflation coming in way lower than expected this week. And then all of a sudden the market turns around because, wow, maybe they're not going to have to do more rate hikes and maybe they keep it just the same.
Yeah.
I think anything can happen.
It's definitely so disappointing how addicted to the Fed the market is now.
Yes.
You know, there's no belief that without the Fed, we can't do anything. And I think that's why no one's big money's not rushing to buy stocks right now. And I think the main reason is they're looking at it and they're like, the Fed's not coming to the rescue at the earliest, maybe 3 months from now, 6 months from now. In terms of like flipping and reversing course, you know, that's still quite a while away. And so I think that's why big money, because from my understanding, a lot of big money is just not buying right now. And we clearly see it in the price action, because if big money was buying, like we wouldn't have this massive sell-off, right? So yeah, it's interesting seeing it, but the devastation for stocks, you know, specifically the higher growth names, the more exciting stories, the long-term 5-10 year out stories, those ones are just can't find bottoms anywhere. And it's just, it's devastating to kind of see, especially from the retail side, because folks are looking at like, let's say a Shopify, let's just keep it simple, right? Shopify was $1,700 a share in November, right? The stock falls to $600, right? Or let's not even say 600. When it fell to 800, you're like, dang, the stock is down over 50%. I should buy the stock. It's down over 50%. There's a Shopify after all. And then it drops another 50% and it's at $400, right? From, you know, 50% from 800 to 400. Now it's in the 300s and you could be buying it now in the 300s. And then like, what if it goes to 200s or the 100s? So that's a tough part for the retail crowd, you know, that just see this devastation and just like...
For me, that I don't know that much about all of this stuff, and it's still kind of difficult for me to grasp why everything is falling at the rate that it is. I understand the whole rate thing and everything, but one thing that I want to know is, were these companies overvalued and now they're kind of just returning to the value that they should be at, or is just everything a deal right now?
Yeah, so definitely a lot of stocks got way overvalued at the end of 2020 and in 2021. You know, that was a pump market. That was a... You know, I even hated making YouTube videos at that time. It was like, you know, I went down to, I think, you know, 4 videos a week because it was such a pump market, man. And it was just like, and everything was just going up insane. You could have the worst business model in the world and have no good future and your stock price was still going up. So there's definitely a lot of stocks were overvalued. But now the question is, at least the question I'm asking is, how many of these stocks are undervalued now? You know, Shopify, I just mentioned, Netflix is cheaper today than that stock was in like 2017. Like, think about all the growth Netflix has had over the years and how much they've improved their income statement and balance sheet and their brand and how much bigger they are now than back then. And now they're even talking about an ad-supported product for Netflix, which could be quite intriguing, where maybe you don't pay for Netflix or you pay a much smaller fee, maybe $2 or $3 a month, and they show ads on there, right? Which is a big potential. So I think that's kind of the thing, is figuring out, like, maybe these stocks are really good values today. You know, but I think there's a lot of great values. For instance, the market is so messed up right now, guys. Listen to this. Clorox and Procter & Gamble trade at higher forward P ratios than Facebook and Google. To me, that makes no sense. Like, why should Clorox and Coca-Cola trade at higher valuations than, let's say, Google and Facebook? Like, there's just, you know, we could make some soda water tonight. We can make some bleach tonight, but we're not making Google tonight. We're not making YouTube tonight. We're not making Facebook tonight, right? So I just think the market's really out of whack. The market's really panicked. The market's really scared. There's deals everywhere in the market. It's like shooting fish in a barrel. But even though it's like shooting fish in a barrel, it doesn't mean it can't go lower in the short term. And that's what makes it, I guess you can say, scary for investors out there.
I always feel like the low point is going to be when people start selling everything.
Yeah.
And they're just like, you know what? I'm done.
Yeah.
This is it. It's not going to get any better. I'm out. When you start seeing those people waiting on the sidelines, that's the point where I feel like we've hit like the worst.
Yeah.
So what is your plan right now? What's your plan right now? And then I'll tell you my plan in these really turbulent times.
Ooh, okay. Graham, you want to go first?
I'm not changing anything. I mean, yesterday I bought a little bit more. I've been, if anything, buying a little bit more just because I was buying at higher. I mean, I buy every day. So I've been buying at higher numbers throughout the last 5 months. Mm-hmm. So now it just seems, in comparison, I'm still investing a little bit more. So I don't know, 15% more.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But I buy on a daily basis. I've been buying a little bit more of the international fund. I'm trying to even that out. But that's it. I've also thought about potentially doing some tax loss harvesting and moving money out of the individual stocks that I've held since 2020.
Okay.
And then moving that to index funds.
I didn't even know you had any substantial money still there.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that, I don't know, $2.5 million. I'm so,
oh,
something
wow.
like that.
Oh, I had no clue. What
yeah,
the heck?
So okay. yeah, but the index funds is the main portion of that. But I could sell off, and part of me is like, well, do I really want to sell now and put, so, I don't know.
Yeah.
But I have the option to tax loss harvest on some of those against each other. Just, some of them are down, and then move that to the index.
Just to be clear, do you have $2.5 million in individual stocks?
Yes.
Whoa, that's news to me. Good for you. Well, I was going to say good for you, but that's a lot of money. I had no clue.
A lot of that was from 2020, because that was the time I was buying individual stocks. And the one I regret was Robinhood.
Oh,
that was my one pain point where I could look back at that. I mean, you know, that was a stupid one, but you know, everyone has a stupid play.
Well, to be fair, everything in fintech has gotten destroyed. Yeah. There's nothing. Square, PayPal, like those are the creme de la cremes. They've been destroyed. Like those stocks are down like 70%+. Affirm is down 80-90%. You know, obviously Robinhood's down that much. Coinbase is down 80% plus from its highs. So every single thing fintech related, lending related, just anything in that category has been destroyed. So to be fair, like, you know, it's not like it's just Robinhood and you picked a bad stock.
Yeah, I know. Now, also in fairness though, there's like 40 individual stocks. Remember, you looked through it like a while ago.
That's
it's
right.
like a whole bunch. I may as well be buying the index at that point because it's spread out so much.
Yeah.
But I hate looking at the portfolio and seeing like 40 different things. I would feel better just looking at this and seeing like five.
Yeah.
And that being like, you know, just a S&P, international, world market, just five good funds and just call it a day. That would make me just simplify it, but that's it. I'm just buying.
I think that's what's probably most people, for me personally, my plan, aggressive, super aggressive right now. Like, I'm not holding like basically almost any cash other than emergency cash. Like, I'm dumping every penny I possibly can into the market right now into stocks that I love for the next 5 years. And the reason I'm so aggressive right now is these years, like 2022, what we're going through right now, they very rarely come. You can't count on the Russell falling 30%. In a matter of 7 months. Like, that doesn't just happen. So this time period, like 2022, I think if you're not being super aggressive, I think it's a mistake. I really do.
My worry though is, and I've said this before with other stocks, is when I look at Cisco from the dot-com bubble and you see Cisco taken, is it 12 years, 15 years? Or no, I think it's still trading below what it was at its peak in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously that's not the case for every stock out there. But I do see that, and it worries me that there's nothing that says the valuations have to come back to where they were.
Yeah, no, 100%. I mean, at the end of the day, though, you do look at bull markets, and you know, people want to own the growth stocks. Like in this time period when everybody's scared, yeah, people don't want growth. They're like index funds or cash, right? But at the end of the day, when the market turns, it throughout history, every single time, what's the thing that comes back the fastest? It's the more speculative stocks and the growth stocks. Those ones bounce the hardest. And a lot of them will go up 50%, 100%, 200% in a matter of months, not even in years. You saw that in 2009. You saw that in March of 2020. So I'm looking at this year. I'm just a super aggressive buyer. That's my plan. I'm not real estate. I'm not cars, watches, nothing. Stocks. And the lower the market goes, I'm just going to continue to be as aggressive as possible. That's my plan, Jack. Yeah.
So my plan right now is to actually build up a little bit more of a cash position because I had basically all of my money in the stock market. Like I was nearly at like account minimums before like this thing started tanking, and then I had to pay my taxes. So I depleted all of my cash then. Okay. And now I still have like no cash because especially after taxes. Mm-hmm. So I'm just trying to build up a cash position to then find another opportunity that I can like go all in on. Because like I said, I was already, you know, 95% of my net worth was in investments.
Yeah.
So I'm just like, you know what? Just build up a little bit more cash because I don't want to keep putting in more money, especially mm-hmm. since I'm not at that level of wealth yet that I should be focusing on being so aggressive in these times. Yeah. Like I should kind of like build up a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I'm just, yeah, I will be investing, but for right now, I think it makes more sense to at least get to the point where it's like, I'm still not 95% invested.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think having 15% of your net worth in cash.
Whoa.
15%. I think there's nothing wrong with that. Especially you own a house. I mean, if
I want to be able to capitalize on opportunities that get presented to me, such as like the syndication and random stuff like that, you know? And I can't do that if I have no cash.
Yeah.
That's a great point. Yeah. I mean, usually I'm 10 to 30% cash, but I ain't 10 to 30% right now. Like I usually preach that. I've broken my own rule now. I'm less than 10%, and I'm going to continue to be less than 10%.
So it's just like all of the income that you're getting from YouTube AdSense, courses, mm-hmm. everything's just straight.
That would stress me out. I'd be so stressed. Yeah. I don't know. My threshold now is I need such a big safety net to feel comfortable.
Yeah. No, I can understand that. Yeah, I mean, we play a little bit differently. I'm a little more aggressive, I definitely feel like. You know, but then again, you've got a pretty big position in, let's say, something like Bitcoin, right? And some people might consider that dangerous. And, you know, when it comes to crypto, I don't want to take this back to crypto too much, but when it comes to crypto, the interesting thing is, if we really go through an 07 through 09 scenario, right? What's going to happen with crypto? There's nobody really regulating crypto still. And there's really no one there to necessarily save the day. And so that's kind of the little crazy part of crypto. And I think that throws the wild card in this kind of economic devastation we're going through. And if it was to level down. And I don't know. We've never seen crypto go through a real recession. You know, the 2020 situation, that wasn't a real recession, right? That was kind of a fake recession where all of a sudden it was like, oh, you don't have to pay your rent, you don't have to pay your mortgage, here's stimulus checks, you know, that don't have to pay your student loans. That was not a real recession. Real recession's like, you know, the government's trying to help, but it's not like to that level, right? So I don't know. That's going to be interesting to just kind of see how crypto does, you know, how Bitcoin does in that sort of scenario.
Yeah, I think people have just seen it crash so many times and they're like, oh, it's just another one of these. Don't worry. It's crashed 5 times and lost 90%. It'll come back. Mm. Based on that, I think a lot of people are carrying that forward and believing it's happened before. Down 50% is nothing. We've been down more than that.
Dude, if Bitcoin was to go down 90%, do you know the amount of videos and people talking trash about crypto that's going to go on?
That's what happened in 2018. It went from 20,000 down to 3.
Yeah.
And what ended up happening was that a lot of excitement, a lot of videos were posted from $20,000 to 8, hovered around 8, and then slow decline, and people just forgot about it. No, I don't want to say they forgot about it, but it was not mainstream.
Yeah,
it didn't really do much. Mm-hmm. And then it slowly made its way back in 2019, 2020, mm-hmm. recovered. Yeah. But for a while, a lot of people thought, well, maybe that was it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, very well could go back down to those, not three, I don't know, I'd be shocked, 3,000. Yeah, but I wouldn't be surprised, 25, 26, high 20s, low 20s.
Yeah.
Who knows? But I think for people that have faith long-term and they want to take the risk on that, that's a small portion of their portfolio on FTX US. Who knows?
Yeah. It's interesting to see everybody allocates differently. The interesting thing with the time period when you're in a contraction period is people get, I would call it, more stingy with their money, right? Not just in terms of going out and spending it, but even with like investments, like you're mentioning, Jack, you know, where you might have been more aggressive to the market, but now you're cashing up, right? So you're not a buyer out there necessarily of stocks right now, even though they're falling and they're, you know, down 70, 80, 90%.
I'm holding. I'm not selling.
Yeah.
I'm holding. I was just, like I said, like 95%, literally like account minimums, right?
Yeah.
So that's where I was. I'm like, okay, I shouldn't be at that, especially when it is falling. I should at least wait because I've already lost a lot. I should at least wait until I see some.
Would you consider selling Robinhood? This has been a big thing with Jack and
What is going on here with Robinhood?
Jack saw me buy Robinhood at the gym.
At the gym.
And he goes, what's that? And I said, I try to hide it. And we have this thing every time Jack buys something that I buy goes down.
Oh no.
And so this has been the one point.
Graham, how much more can it go down though?
Oh, no, please.
It's like really, let's say I sell it, right? Yeah. Or don't sell it and I hold, right? Or buy more or whatever. Is it really going to go down like $5?
Yes. Good.
I like it your could. Mentality, Jack.
You know, and then how much is that hands, for you? Baby. It's like it's already gone down from 30 or whatever. It's like
the thing is this is that I was ready to pay Jack $500 to sell it at $17 a share.
Wow.
When it was trading at 17. I think you said something, Graham, it's already down 50%.
Like, yeah, it's not going to go down.
It's not going to go. Yeah. So I have a superstition. Yeah. The moment Jack sells Robinhood, the crash is going to be over.
Oh,
I think
that will be the bottom.
I think
the bottom's
in. You could save everything.
You could save the whole economy.
You save the whole economy if you just sell Robinhood stock.
Oh my goodness!
I'll think about it.
All right. Wow.
I'll think about it.
This is intense.
Jack, I went in really heavy on Robinhood.
What if I paid you $500?
Well, I'll think about it. That's about as much money I have in Robinhood now. Right?
It's like 6,000 shares.
Yeah. Would you do it if I gave you $500?
I'll think about it, Graham.
Wouldn't even do it.
Think about it.
Would you want to throw in on this?
No, it's fine.
To bottom the market? No, because I'm still buying.
You want
the
stocks
to
continue
year,
going
do
down.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can. Exactly.
Oh, are you paying Jack to keep it? You would be like, I'll pay $500 to keep it.
Oh, gosh. Alex, I want to know about you, man. What do you plan on doing with your money for the rest of 22?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm actually considering taking out money of the market. Now, that's only because my wife and I are potentially looking to buy a house. Mm-hmm. I talked to Graham. Right now, luckily, most of our things were still doing pretty good. And so just for the stability, I could miss out on a big run. But I think once we know for sure the time frame, so probably within the next 6 months or so, we'll know. That's when we'll decide whether we want to take the money out or not.
Okay, Mr. Alex, did you not see this right here? I don't know if we can see that clearly or not.
That's Kevin.
No, I did not. What?
Mr. Kevin.
Now
says,
is not the time.
Now is, in all caps, not the time to buy real estate. He posted that 1 hour ago because I went on YouTube before I came over, and like, that was the number one thing suggested to me. So when you, like, listen, okay? I know Kevin gets hate for things. That man knows about real estate. Okay? I don't want to hear anybody talk down about Kevin on real estate. That man knows real estate as well as anybody, right? If Kevin says don't buy real estate, Alex, you really want to do it?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're saying you know more than Kevin about real estate.
Oh, whoa. I never said that. I never said that. No, I just, you know, with the way that the rates are going, and I don't see that house prices are going to come down a significant amount. I think that inventory is still going to stay tight for a little while. And I mean, you know, I'd say, you know, if I'm not looking to buy a rental, mm-hmm. and I'm looking for a home for me and my wife that we're going to hold, you know, at least minimum for the next 8 to 10 years, mm-hmm. I'd say it doesn't matter.
Okay.
And that's my point. Yeah.
So. I think the big thing is for anyone looking to buy is to negotiate. I mean, no matter, there's always going to be a deal out there. And even Kevin would know this. There's mm-hmm. always a wedge property out there. There's always something. There's always a seller in distress. There's always going to be an opportunity to buy. There are going to be deals out there. There's going to be opportunities. And do I think it's going to take more time? Absolutely. But, you know, if we're saying overall, I wouldn't be shocked if the market goes down a little bit, but
yeah.
I do think there are opportunities out there. And I think during times where there's uncertainty and people are not buying, it's just where you look.
Okay. Alex, from 07 to 2011 here in Vegas, real estate prices dropped over 50%.
That's fine. I mean, like okay. I said, I'm not looking to buy, you know, a crazy, you know, rental or anything.
Yeah.
And I think if I'm holding out, you know, like I said, minimum 8 to 10 years, I don't see a way that, well, I shouldn't say that, but yeah. Based on history, I don't see that happening.
Okay.
Where I would.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
End up losing, especially like Graham said, if I, you know, if I find a good deal, it's not like I'm just going to, you know, overpay for a house. First of all, I can't afford to overpay for a house.
Yeah.
I think, you know, but with the way that, that the supply is, especially in the Vegas market, I think it'll be softening around the US, but especially for the Vegas market, I think I would be okay to buy a home.
Yeah. 2008 was so different. I mean, mm-hmm. that with being people were being foreclosed on. I don't think we're going to see foreclosures.
Yeah, well, my parents got okay. foreclosed yeah. on in 2008. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And my wife's family as well. And a close friend of mine out here in Vegas, he did either a short sale or mm-hmm. foreclosure. The one thing I would say is if I was buying real estate, I would put the most minimum amount down as I possibly could right now, just for the mere fact that kind of hedging in case we get into one of those scenarios, you can walk away.
That's and actually where I that's actually where I agree with you, and I disagreed with Jack.
Okay.
Because when Jack was buying, he was putting like a ton of money down.
What did you put, 20?
Yeah.
I agree with that. I like that. Yeah.
Yeah, but to me, I see more value in holding my money and being able to leverage it, especially at the interest rate that the Jack got locked in, versus putting up all my money up front. I mean, again, it's a personal choice of how much you want to leverage. But I would have put not the minimum amount down, but you know, I probably would have put about anywhere between 8 to 10%
there. Then you're paying PMI and you're not going to get a conventional rate like Jack. Jack got a primo loan.
I lucked out.
Yeah, 2.8%.
Yeah. That I have some equity in the house, and I lowered my mortgage payment also because I just owe less on it.
Yeah.
So I don't know. My mortgage is like $1,700, right? For a pretty nice house, and I can rent out the rooms.
Yeah.
And it makes sense financially. Whereas if I put a lot less down, like you said, PMI, other random stuff, and I don't know.
Yeah. Alex, I just think over 10 years, your chance of not breaking even or not, you know, losing money over 10 years is slim. Short term, values are going to fluctuate. Mm-hmm. Demand is going to ebb and flow. But I think over 10 years, 12 years, this is a home for you to live in and
just find a deal.
Yeah, exactly. Preferably something. I think it'd be interesting. Find something you could fix up.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty handy for the most part.
Okay, so let's run through a scenario here for a moment. Let's say Alex, he really wants to buy a home. So he puts 5% down, let's say right now, right? Let's say we do get into a major real estate crash where prices, let's say they don't drop 50% plus like they did previously, but let's say it's 30%, right? He could walk away at that time and then buy something else, right?
In 7 years, he'd screw his credit.
Yeah.
No, I would never advocate walking away from a deal just because you're underwater.
Okay.
Ever. I mean, I would tell you, Alex, rent out that. First of all, you would be able to hopefully you'd be able to afford the house. I mean,
yeah, free to walk away. Yeah, to decide, man.
Yeah, you and Kelsey would both have to lose your incomes, have nothing to fall back on. The lender would have to, you wouldn't want to work with you on that, which at least right now they're very accommodating for stuff like that.
Yeah.
So much would have to happen. And then on top of that, let's just say you couldn't afford to sell it and you're just like, then you rent it. And hopefully that's enough to cover the majority of your cost, or you get roommates and you do what Jack is doing. You live for free. There's so mm-hmm. many different options to avoid walking away from a house.
So speaking about roommates, the house that I'm in, I've been rent hacking, right? And I'm going to be having an open room, so two open rooms soon. And my wife does not want to rent those rooms out anymore. And what I was bringing in previously, so I gave my previous roommate a really good deal. I rented her two rooms for $1,000, which is like 50% almost of like, I think what Jack charges or something like that.
Wow.
Price gouging.
Like, wow. He's calling you out.
No, no,
but
no,
Jack saying, has, but Jack has a pool.
I have a pool.
Oh yeah. Jack has a pool. Yeah. No, definitely. I get that.
In a ping pong room.
I'm just saying that, I think it's a really, really fair deal for that. Mm-hmm. Now, roommates moving out, wife is considering not wanting roommates. Mm. So I was trying to figure out like, that's $1,000 a month minimum that I'm like giving up on. I'm like, how can I do that? So you know what she told me?
Go get another job.
I told her, no, I told
get
her.
Get a job. Go back
job
to work.
With a real boss.
I was like, honey, that's $1,000 a month. I was like, that's a Tesla. And then she said, if we bought a Tesla, she would let us have roommates until the Tesla's paid off.
Wow.
No.
Yes.
That's tough negotiation.
So I told her, because first she said, just a Tesla, and I was like, but here's the deal. If you buy a Tesla and you're committed to $1,000 a month, I was like, you have to have them until the Tesla is paid off. Like, let's say we move, you have to agree to have roommates until that's paid off. I think it's a horrible idea. I don't know if I want to do that because that's a whole liability. So I'm trying to see if we can I'll take you on a cruise, you know?
Yeah, that is a ball and chain for the next 5 years to pay down car, taking on debt for a roommate that doesn't exist who may not pay you.
Yes.
And you have a situation like we had that guy Jason on.
We're in negotiation, yes.
Well, also finding a mortgage with a $700 a month car payment is going to make that drastically more challenging.
See, that's the thing. Jack brings up a really good point. When you get a mortgage, they're counting that debt. They're not counting the income you make. Well, yeah, I'm sure there are ways to add in, but they're not looking at that in your future home and saying, oh, well, you could rent out the bedrooms. I see. I like the relationship questions like this because this is interesting because Alex wants $1,000 a month.
I want to know what your opinion on this. Yeah. Like, obviously, compromise is good in most situations. Like, you have to be financially compatible with your partner if you want to have a successful relationship. But let's say one person is just objectively bad with finances. One person is just objectively good. The objectively good person knows what to do, right? Like, in this situation, I just think it's not the smart idea to be buying a Tesla, right? Like,
we're in like negotiation, right? But
is the negotiation. But, yeah. So she's asking a lot. He's got a counter.
Yeah, I got a counter. Like, my next move is like, you know, a cruise, you know, that can pay itself in like 1.5 months. But I think, Jack, to your point, I don't think that that's the argument here, though, because the argument would be different if we couldn't afford the entire rent of the house. The current argument is what the wife wants versus what I want, obviously. And would it strain us financially? No. But
I think a payment on a Tesla would seriously.
I'm not talking about the Tesla, Jack. I'm talking about the losing out on the $1,000 a month from a roommate. That's what I'm talking about. Because I didn't say.
You know what I would do? Here's what I would do. Say, honey, we're going to get a roommate, but the $1,000 a month that comes in, we're going to put this into our special account. And over the next 5 years, $1,000 a month, that's going to be $60,000. Well, guess what? In 5 years from now, you and I can use that money as a down payment on a house, or if we have a down payment already, that could boost us up. That could be our entire renovation budget for the next 5 years. And all we have to do is just live with somebody else.
You could allocate less. Like, you could always say, okay, let's say we generate $1,000 from these two rooms. You could say 30% of it is free spend, and you can go and spend it on stuff. Like, I still feel like that would be better than spending the entire thing on.
Or you could say, out of the $1,000, you get $250, I get $250, and the rest is the savings for the house.
Yeah.
Well, you have joint, everything.
Alex?
Yeah, I know, but yes. I figured
there's a reason these guys aren't married, okay?
What do you think?
Yeah, Jeremy, let us know. Man.
We're talking about something very, very serious. You're talking about people living with you, right? And I know a lot of women do not want that situation regardless of money, unless it's such an obscene amount of money, right? That they're just not willing to do that. And so it doesn't, the $1,000, if it doesn't really mean that to her, you don't want to put that necessarily that strain on the relationship. Because you don't want her to be miserable or just like in a bad place for a year, 2 years, whatever, just to make an extra $1,000. Because there's a lot of things in this world you could do, you can make money from, right? And to give up your living space is a big thing. And even myself, I never have been the type that wanted roommates. And I understand you can live cheaper and things like that. I'm not that type of person. And I just know there's a lot of females specifically that don't like having roommates. And they don't want that. And so, you know, to push that issue, it depends. I don't know your wife like that, but I'm just saying, like, to really push that issue, it can cause bigger problems and it can cause more serious problems that, you know, are way beyond $1,000 a month. Yeah.
I was just assuming that, yes, it's a given that they will move someone in. It's just a matter of, will they spend that $1,000 with us? But I do agree. It's like, as far as the decision goes, to actually go through and move someone in, of course,
you can't never force
to do that.
But they've had a really good experience with their last roommate. Really enjoyed it.
You could Airbnb, Alex, and you could try it for like four nights.
That seems worse.
Well, no, he's moving in a random person anyways, right?
No, it wouldn't be a random person.
No, I think it'd be somebody that at least I know. I mean, it's...
How strongly does your wife feel about this situation, about not having roommates?
That's a great question. I think that she definitely does not. That's why her ask was so big, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I said it as a joke, like, oh, $1,000 a month, like, that's a Tesla. Like, I think that she definitely does not want roommates. That's why the ask was so big. And that's why I said, Jack, sometimes it's not about like the money smart person making all the financial decisions. Because when it comes down to it, we technically don't need the extra $1,000 and she would be happier, like Jeremy said. And with, I don't know, this must be common among women. She does not feel comfortable with everybody living with her, right? We got lucky that we found our last roommate. Mm-hmm. And finding, you know, a roommate might be a little bit challenging.
Yeah, just leave it open. And then if someone comes along that you're comfortable living with,
I like
then
that.
In that case, move them in. But yeah, definitely. Like, seriously, I would say it's objectively worse for you to move someone in just to buy a Tesla, right? Even if you basically guarantee that they'll be able to afford the payment. I think that's just objectively worse than leaving it open.
Yeah, you got to find the right person. It's not worth it, any person for $1,000. But if you find the right person.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's why we gave our last roommate, like, such a good deal, just because... We didn't care if it was a little bit lower than market rate. It's just
Alex, you're going to get so many applications right now. Everyone in Las Vegas who wants one room
goes there on occasion, guys.
I do. I show up there. And Alex, this means maybe your garage spot is open, doesn't it?
You know what? Yeah, Graham's been trying to weasel his way into my garage and rent a car space because he just bought... you announced it, right, Graham?
I didn't announce it.
Actually. Okay, well, he bought a car.
Yeah, bought another car.
You know, and he needs a place to keep it. And I told him, no, Graham, I like to work in the workshop, and my roommate has the other side.
Guess what? No roommate.
No roommate.
Alex, you said it's two rooms, right?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about moving in with the kids, if that's all right with you. I need to buy the dip. And I need to save as much money as possible. I'm thinking I could rent my house for maybe... What do you think I could get for that over there, Graham?
Well, it's next to Graham, so there's a premium.
No.
7,000.
I would say 65,000.
It's a $3 million house.
No, it's not $3 million.
It's at least 2.8. No. Yes, it is. It just got appraised.
It got appraised at 2.4.
Oh, but that's low.
No,
that's low.
Come
that's
on. Honestly, man, I'm realistic.
I got appraised that high.
That's
2.4?
Way low.
Yeah, you got a good appraisal. You got a good appraisal,
that's
man.
That's horrible.
No, I think you got a great appraisal.
Yeah, but that's a horrible appraisal.
I think it's a
you pulled money out of your house?
Yes.
To invest in stocks?
Yeah.
Holy crap.
I pulled money out of the Santa Monica house.
To buy stocks?
No, not to buy stocks. No, I lowered
cars and watches.
Yeah, no. It worked out in that place because I lowered my interest rate and got money back.
You got a higher interest rate.
Right around the same.
Really?
3.1.
3.1.
It's not bad on a casual. No. Yeah, 3.1 is that.
That's a horrible appraisal. The house is worth 2.8 to 3, Graham.
If you get 3, I'll give you a.
I'm not going to sell the house, but let's just say.
I was about to say I'd give you $100,000 if you get $3 million for that house.
$1,000 for every 200 is usually a safe number. So if it's a $1 million house, you should be able to get 5. If it's a $2 million house,
I've looked at the rental market here. The rental market is so soft, about $5,000 a month, because those people are buying houses. They're not renting.
Would you sell this house right here? This is, for everyone that doesn't know, this is the neighboring house to Jeremy's house. Fairly similar. Would you sell this house for 2.5?
No, because I have nowhere to move to.
Hmm.
No. If I got $3 million for this house, I would... The hard part is that extra profit worth the hassle of moving again? And the answer to me is probably
the
not.
Moving, sure. The time.
Yeah, it's probably not because I'm happy here. But at $3 million, I would seriously contemplate that offer. It's just, where would we go? And
Alex's rooms.
No, I'm taking those rooms, man.
Yeah.
Okay, so what can I get for over there, Graham?
What, for rent?
Yeah.
65 to 7.
Wow, that'd be really low, but I'll still, that's a great number.
That's what you could realistically get.
I'm factoring in the marketing factor of you get to live next to Graham. So you get to bother him whenever you want. You just walk over and...
No, but Alex, I'm thinking about moving in with you, if that's okay. Like, I could... Oh, use an extra $6,000 a month to stocks.
You know why I know this? There's a property that came on the market. I think I showed it to you.
Uh-huh.
It was like $4 million.
Okay.
And out of curiosity, I thought, because I wouldn't want to sell this because I wouldn't want to give up the loan. I thought, what could I rent this house for if I decided to buy that? Because I don't want to keep this empty. I don't want to sell it. I want to keep it. And around that 65-75 number.
Wow.
That's where I came up with.
Dang.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
And then I'm like, well, you know, these properties as a rental do not make any sense. It's at a price point people are buying. The rentals, 450 and lower, 500,000 lower. That's when you start to make a good ROI.
Yeah, and we were talking about this other night. I can't imagine paying like $6,000 or $7,000 in rent. Like, that just seems insane. Graham he can wrap his head around it because he comes from LA. But like, for me, like, oh my gosh, I remember when I moved to Vegas, I knew somebody that lived in a house in Seven Hills. They paid $7,700 a month in rent. And like, I just could never imagine paying that much in
rent. You know what the difference
is? One thing.
The difference with LA is it seems like people come there for a few years for work.
Yeah.
And it doesn't make sense for them to buy. Or they relocate to Los Angeles and for a year or two they want to rent. Here, people move here as like, this is the final place that they're going to be staying. Mm-hmm. It's not a place where I'm going to work in Vegas for a year or two and then leave.
Well, and it used to be a little bit of a different city. It used to be a little more, they called it, the word was, I don't know, transient or something like that.
Transient.
Where, people were come in and out.
Come and go.
But you bring up a great point there. So I don't know. We'll see what happens with the rental market over time. But I don't know, man. I think I'm about moving in with Alex. You want 2-3 kids next to your room, Alex? How about
you know, the wife's probably going to have a premium for that one. You
oh,
know?
Premium? Yeah. Oh, my
Probably like
I feel like Jeremy's actually serious, but it's not because he's trying to raise money. It's just because the stock market's just been terrible.
he's like,
I want to buy. No, he's trying to save money. He's trying to survive.
An extra like $6,000 a month in stocks.
Why would you ever move back to the other house? And then save the difference and plow
it all. No,
because
it's too much work
really?
To move everything back, yeah. But I could rent that other house for a really good number. But I'm going to sell that other house so I can put that money in the market. I'm telling you, man, I'm going heavy 22. There's no
one
cash.
One thing that I don't understand, Jeremy, is why is there not one single inkling that's like that's telling you, hey, man, why don't you just preserve a little bit of what you made?
I would love that.
You did so well. You made so much money, but for some reason, you're still incredibly aggressive in the market. And I feel like if anyone else was in your situation, they'd be like, yo, $3 million. Like, I really like the equity in my house. Like, I like these things that I have. I don't want to like take it out. You know, why are you still so aggressive in the market? Like, is there a reason you're just chasing more money or what?
Yeah, I would say that. I'm going to make so much money, it's going to be disgusting. Yes.
So it's either you want to be rich or broke.
Well, no matter what, it's not going to be broke. Unless all my companies go bankrupt.
Yeah.
So
It'll never be broke. I mean, everything would have to drop like 90%. It's not going to happen.
No, even then, I'd still be rich. If all my stocks fell 90%, I'd still be rich.
Yeah, you'd still be rich. Yeah.
So all my companies would have to go bankrupt. PayPal, Facebook,
the difference between
Chef,
one
Honest.
To 3 million is a lot though, and the difference between 3 and like 10, I feel like, isn't gonna make that much of a lifestyle change.
Oh, it does. Yeah.
3 and 10 versus 1 and 3.
Yes.
I feel like 1 and 3 is a bigger deal.
Definitely 1 and 3 is bigger lifestyle, but 3 to 10 is absolutely substantial.
But at least to support the lifestyle that you guys are currently living, it's like 1 to 3, right? Yes. Rather than 3 to 10.
Oh yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah, you're right,
Jeremy. I'm pretty aggressive. I signed 2 houses during peak Rona. You know, when everybody was scared out of their minds about real estate was going to crash and we're going to have unemployment of 20% for the next 3 years, I signed 2 houses. I'm not even a real estate person. Like, I'd only owned 1 house at that time, and I signed 2. So I play a little more aggressively than most. I don't play like Robinhood aggressive where I'm like, I'm going all in on some short-term call options or something like that.
Dangerous.
So, well, that's all. Yeah. There's like levels of risk. I feel like I'm the right level of risk for me. You know, that's me.
Until when, right?
Oh, man, I don't know. I'm so hungry still. That's the thing. And I can't, the hardest thing for me is to look at an asset and say, I think this asset's going to appreciate ... over the next 3 years, 5 years, whatever, and to sit on my hands. I would rather that asset goes down short term. I'd even rather be wrong about that asset long term than be like, I loved that whatever, and I passed on it because I'd rather hold cash or an extra level of cash or something like that. Like for me, that eats me up more. That not knowing I knew that was going to go up, I knew that was going to happen, and like I didn't do anything about it. That hurts me the most. So, and I've had that happen with stocks before where I sat on my hands or time periods when I sat on my hands more and I wasn't as aggressive. And so that's just kind of my name of the game, you know, but it's not for everybody. I will say that. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that if they're in my position, they would definitely play it much more conservative. Like, oh, let's just go index funds. Let's get our whatever percent or dividends or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that's why it all comes down to like everybody's different, right? You know, Graham, you look at your portfolio and say, I got 6%. Is it 6% of your net worth? Did you say was in Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Okay. 6%. Another person might look at that and they say, that's insane, man. Bitcoin's worthless. Like, how could you have 6%? Another person's like, dude, why you only got 6%? Like Bitcoin's the future. You need to have like at least 16%. So
yeah, that's true. Man.
Everybody's a little different.
Right.
What would you do if you were in my shoes, Jack?
If I were in your shoes, mm-hmm. Well, I don't know how much money you have.
Nobody does, Jack. So how much money
it's
you have?
Really hard. Like, let's just assume that you have $10 million.
Okay.
That's your worth. $10 million. I would honestly, bro, $5 million, I would have it in like safe stuff. And you can still dabble. Like there's so much upside potential still with $5 million, right?
Yeah.
And if you're wrong, you're not screwed.
Yeah.
But if you're wrong and you're doing $9.5 million or $9 million when you have $10 million, if you're wrong, you're pretty screwed.
Yeah.
Right? The upside difference between $9.5 million and $5 million, if you're investing, it's not going to make that much of a difference as doing $5 million and losing out on that $5 million or whatever. Yeah. You know what I mean?
No, I see what you're saying. I think some of it comes back to like how long you want to play the game of money for business investing, things like that. And I think it also comes back to even more than that, the confidence level that if you took a big loss, you could recover from it. I think that's another big factor. Like, let's say you won the lottery for $10 million, right? And you never had any money. Well, shoot, if you lose that $10 million, you know, well, first off, after taxes, probably $5 million. You don't have the skills to build a business or invest. You don't know anything about that, right? For me, I'm like, even if all my stocks fail, like all of them, which would be devastation to the entire economy if for that to happen, like worse than the Great Depression, in my opinion. But if that were to happen, like I can make it back.
Are you really going to have the energy to? 100%. Because think about how much effort and how much time and your kids and they're growing older. Maybe you have a new kid, right? Yeah. It's like,
you have a new one. Another one.
Like, are you really going to have all the energy, especially considering your family, to do that? And maybe right now you may think you do, but the future is uncertain. And to not prepare yourself for the worst case scenario in the future, while still, it's like the difference in upside between 5 and 9.5 is not going to be that much difference. But you can't risk losing 9.5 would be so much worse than the amount of enjoyment you get out of betting 5 or whatever.
But I'm going for billions.
Why?
I'm playing a different game. I want to be stupid rich. Like you can't even imagine like how much money I have. Like just crazy. So that's where I'm trying to go.
I mean, I think you already got there because we don't even know how much money you
have. Maybe it could be 100 mil. We have no idea.
No. It's not 100 mil. But no, I mean, at the end of the day, I'm trying to go to like crazy numbers. Like, and I'm not satisfied till I get to like the most crazy numbers. Like, wow, he really.
What if you're never satisfied?
Much. That's a possibility. I could have 50 billion and still be like, oh, I'm getting to 100, man. Elon's at 1 trillion now. I got to catch him. So it's a race for me.
One other thing that you mentioned earlier that I should have interjected on was like Kathy Wood and how you can say, oh, in a certain time, she's going to be doing extremely well. Everyone's praising her. And then you let a little bit more time go by and then everyone's attitude towards her shifts and they hate her because she loses money.
Yeah.
More time goes by, she starts doing really well and people start loving her. Mm-hmm. Maybe more time goes by, she goes down again, right? Yep. Like what range of time
are you actually going to set to say, you're right, within this amount of time, we're going to give you kudos, right? Yeah. Like, you've done well, right? Is it 20 years? Is it 50? Is it your entire life?
Ooh.
What range of time is it where you're actually right? Because like you said, people will always be up and down.
It's true.
And we just talked about Warren Buffett and Cathie Wood, who have completely different investing styles. Yeah. They're the same. They go up and down.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, I think when it's all said and done, you look over a 20 or 30 year span. I think in the short term, people are very judgmental of either people or stocks or crypto or whatever it is, right? But yeah, that's a great point. I mean, for me, I look at everything kind of different. I always look at my stocks like a 3 to 5 year time horizon. And if I didn't make money in that stock, you know, by year 4 or year 5, that was a failed investment. If that stock didn't actually outperform the market, it was a failed investment. And I'm like, dang, I made a mistake there.
But you'd say it takes 30 years of true success in beating the market over range. Of course, you maybe sometimes it'll be worse, sometimes better, but overall better over 30 years is what it takes to truly be like.
Yeah, I think a decade would be good to be judged as an investor over a decade. 2 decades is pretty impactful. If you're judging on kind of that, I don't know if you were talking a little bit more about the macro level of like overall wealth and things like that. But I think most people that you really respect, they performed at a high level for actually several decades. That's whether it's business people, investors. You know, if you think about some of the people we respect the most, right? Steve Jobs, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, Warren Buffett, the greatest of the great investors. Those people did it for decades. They didn't just do it for a year or two. They did it for decades. And that's why we respect them so much, not just because they got rich, but because they performed at a high level for decades. So same thing in sports. And you know, you guys aren't the biggest sports fans, but the ones that are always the ones that are remembered as the greatest, those are the ones that performed at a high level for 10, 15, 20 years. Anybody that performed great, you could have won an MVP.
They have 3 seasons that like they're the MVP.
No one remembers them. Yeah. I mean, maybe the super diehard fans, but people don't remember that. You got to be great over a long period of time. That's how you really get that respect, if that's what you're going for. For me, the respect doesn't really matter. I just want the big numbers. So, you know, yeah, everybody's playing for a little different. I play differently than other people. So, Graham, you're going to hit big numbers, man. You're at big numbers. You're going to hit bigger numbers.
I know, but the more money I get, the safer I generally want to play it.
Yeah. And I think that's how, I don't want to say that's how a lot of rich people are, but that's how a group of wealthy people are. But there's nothing out there that says you want to become a billionaire necessarily or something.
No.
Like okay.
No.
You just always want to live a comfortable life, sleep well at night, have plenty of money. And those sorts of things.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I like when a good deal comes. I like the deals.
Okay.
A good deal comes up. You know, like the car. Yeah. If I got that car because, you know, I believe in that car. It's a good one. I like being able to get a good deal.
Because you could be.
The opportunities.
You could be a billionaire. Nah. You're so young.
No.
Oh, man.
Realistically, no.
I think realistically, absolutely. When you're that young and you have that much money already and you have the skills you have, I mean, I don't think there's a lot. You've revealed your net worth before publicly. How many people at 32 have that sort of net worth?
I don't know.
Very slim amount. Like 0.00000001%.
But if I could place it all in a fund that guarantees like inflation plus 3% a year for the rest of it, I would probably take it.
If you put your entire net worth into a fund that got 8% a year, when would you hit billionaire status?
A long time, probably.
I think it would happen at some point. That'd be fun to pull up on a calculator. If you put your entire net worth in something that mirrored the S&P and let's say got 8% a year, when would you hit billionaire status? I think that could be a cool number to know.
Jeremy, this may be kind of an inappropriate question.
Oh boy.
Okay.
Oh,
but if you had to place your bets,
okay,
where do you think Graham stops, at least wealth wise?
Well, he shared with me, Pat, in the past, I think it was 100. I think
no, but 100 like, million. Sure, that's what he wants.
Oh, okay.
Where do you think he will make it?
Oh,
wealth-wise.
If
you had to place your bets, your confidence on Graham.
55 years is how long it would take at an 8% interest rate to hit $1 billion.
Okay, so you'd be 87.
Yeah, but by the time that happens,
a billion's not
what's that?
It's not respected.
Gosh, what's that going to be? Now, if we take 8%, we minus 3% a year, we really take a net 5%. Buying power. What's that going to be? Significantly long. Like I'm going to be long gone.
Yeah.
Unless I could live forever.
Well, I was going to say, how much longer do you see yourself going hard, let's say, and really making a big income and like trying and things like that? Do you have a like a
few years, of, 5 years,
really?
10 years? Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty short.
I'm sure it'll evolve. Yeah. Well, okay. I know that the schedule that I'm doing is unsustainable. I can't do it, nor do I want to do it for that. Like the feeling of indefinite 12-hour days. Yeah. It's like that. That's miserable to me.
Yeah.
So I
7 years from
now.
Yeah,
listen, I enjoy it now, and yeah. I will continue doing it as long as I enjoy it. And if it becomes, if the pain from doing that overrides the enjoyment that I have and the fun, I'm not going to do it anymore.
Okay.
And it's so simple for me. Do I have fun? Do I enjoy it? Yes, do it. If not, then I'm not going to do it.
Okay, but okay, yeah. Let's say today, I don't know, you had $100 million or whatever, right? Like, what would you do on a daily basis? Like, what are you doing to fill that time?
I'd go to the gym and then probably the iced coffee.
You still would do coffee?
Yeah.
How much you have.
Yeah, I would do the iced coffee hour on the road.
On the road?
Yeah. If unlimited money, yeah, iced coffee hour on the road. Get private a big, jet. Yeah. No, private. I think getting a killer RV, like a really nice RV with one of those tow things where we could take this set and a tow thing in the back.
Yeah.
RV it and visit all 50 states.
Oh, that would be cool.
I would love to do that. And just every state, just spend like 2 weeks in each state and just like checking out what's around. I'm sure we'd be able to find such cool guests.
Oh, that would be awesome.
That's what I
would
do.
Would you go for that ride, Jack?
I have no idea where I'm going to be at that point in my life, but probably.
If I gave you $5 million today and you could never do anything on social media for the rest of your life, would you take that deal? You would have to give up everything social media for the rest of your life.
Is that before tax or after tax?
Let's do after tax.
All right, $5 million.
$5 million.
$5 million.
Oh, this is disappointing. It's really disappointing.
Oh boy.
I like to think like I wouldn't have purpose without work.
Okay.
You know, and I think that purpose is what gives people happiness.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I feel like I would be so dumb to say no to that. You know. So
think about all the options trades on Robinhood you could do with that $5 million.
$5 million? Yes. Can Graham continue the iced coffee hour?
By himself, yeah. But you can't ever do anything on social media for the rest of your life.
But he could work behind the scenes.
Yeah, can I do behind the scenes stuff on the iced coffee hour?
You could, yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
I just couldn't be physically present.
Nope.
Yeah. I'd do it.
Yeah, I would tell you. I'd tell you to do it, though.
Yeah. Graham agrees with me. That would be the smart thing.
Yeah. If you're behind the scenes. But you can't make money from social media, so you couldn't
make any money from it.
Nope. From social media?
No. Nope.
Yeah, I'd still do it.
Oh, yeah, then do it, because you're still getting the purpose.
Yeah, I mean, $5 million.
Save me money.
If I got 4% on that, that's still
more
that's
for
a lot
me.
Of money.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't
know. More moolah for me to get closer.
I don't know if you'd really keep showing up when you got that much money and you're not getting paid. That would be interesting. I know a lot of people would say
that. No, of course, I would for sure, all of the back end. I would leave you, of course, but like I would hire it out so it's all taken care of.
Okay.
But yeah, I would love to travel with Graham. If I didn't have to worry about money at all, traveling around the United States sounds amazing.
I think so.
Yes,
coffee hour. That
but if
I think
do have to worry
goal.
About money, that makes me a little hesitant.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be fun. Like I remember I watched, I think it was Innes Yilsmeyer did one on some crazy RV. It had a little car that came out of
it. Yep, a little smart car.
Yeah, that was $1 million. So cool. It's $1 million for one of those? Wow. Yeah, that would be cool. You guys.
Yeah. You could find amazing used ones or not even that for like $250,000-$300,000 that are amazing. You don't need something like that.
Yeah. All right, Alex, what's your number over there? Your number to
my number for what?
You can never work with Graham ever again for the rest of your life.
That was like $200,000.
Yeah. Yeah. Just give me 50.
Yeah. Give me I mean, how much do you got?
50
there,
grand.
Yeah. Bar's pretty low over here.
All right. $2 million. Never again.
After tax?
After tax.
Oh, Alex, I tell you. I
that's
tell you.
The easiest.
In my head, it makes sense to do it because here's the thing. I would be set for life.
Yeah.
Like,
I tell you to
like,
do it.
I would, like, I love doing what I do and I have confidence that, you know, I can grow in the space. But $2 million set for life, not having to worry. I mean, you know, I would probably do it. Yeah.
Okay.
But guess what? We asked you, Jeremy. There's not going to be any amount.
There's no amount. Yeah. There's no
what
amount.
What if I just said you can never trade stocks again?
Oh,
I couldn't do it.
Couldn't do it?
I couldn't
what
do
about,
it.
What about you could only buy an index fund?
Oh, no.
No, really. Is there an amount where if I gave you $10 million and say you sell
definitely
all the individual
not for
stocks?
$10 million. Definitely really? Not. No, it's 100% no.
20.
No, I would start considering at 100.
Oh,
what?
Come on.
100. Jeremy.
Yes.
No
get out
Jeremy.
Of here.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Because I love it that much. I love it. I know it sounds crazy, but like to not listen to conference calls.
But you could paper trade. You could still listen to all of that. You just can't buy them. You just can't buy them. You could do all the work you are, except when you click the buy button, you just click anywhere else on the screen.
Well, they have like those stock simulator apps.
Yeah.
So you just be on stock simulators and be like, guys, look, I'm ranked number 3 in the world.
Yeah. That's like saying, yeah, you can eat this pizza, but you can't really eat this pizza. You just kind of like almost touch it and put it in your mouth.
Well, you could put it in your mouth, but not swallow it.
No, I think it's different than that. I think it's like the argument of like, okay, you could buy a real life Ferrari for, you know, whatever they cost, $600,000, or we're like living 30 years in the future. we're living, you know, 30 years in the future.
Yeah.
And you can buy a digital Ferrari for like $2,000, and the experience that you get is literally like 99% the same. What would you do?
Oh yeah, that's a good question. So, yeah, I mean, with me with stocks, it's just it's that hunt for the next stock that I think is going to be the next big one. That to me is so fun, man. And I, most people will not understand that, but that feeling when you research a new company and you're like, oh my gosh, like this one's going to be the next big one. That feeling is something I can't really describe. And some people don't care, but some people do. So, right, anyways, cool. For you, those of you watching at home, what's your number? You never work again. Tell us your number in that comment section. We'd love to hear from you guys as always.
Well, thank you guys again. We really appreciate it. Jack, we'll link to your information down below in the description as our lovely guest, Alex,
who's editing. Wait. When it comes to Jack, what do we link to for him? Is this like his Tinder profile?
We'll link to your Tinder account. Imagine. Can you link to Tinder profiles?
You can.
Can you, Jack?
Let's
can you?
Do it.
No, you can't. No, you cannot link to Tinder profiles.
Oh, no. It's just everyone just swipes right.
How about this?
That
guys?
Was like a thing.
If you're a lovely female in Las Vegas and you want to take Jack on a date, go ahead and just message him on Instagram. No,
let's see what the audience looks like here.
How's this appropriate? Is what Jack's
every time.
Say.
All right, what's the demographic?
Let's see what the demographic is really quick before we say this. Okay. Wow. 92% male. We got 8% female though.
For the 8% of you.
For the 8% of you. That's still a lot. Listen, on 100,000 views, that's 8,000.
Yeah, but you have to think about it this way. What percent of the 8% are in Las Vegas?
Okay, wait.
What percent of the 8% are in my age range?
So here's the deal.
What percent of the 8% are not taken?
So of the 8%, 67% are in the United States. So that's 5,360 that are in the U.S.
Okay.
Of the age brackets, 50%. Well, no, we have 60% between the ages of 18 and 34. So we'll take 60. So that's 3,200 between the ages of 18 and 34.
Okay. Well, I think my upper bracket is going to be a little lower than 34.
and then wait.
Go 40.
That's 50% of my life. Like the difference right there. Like,
oh, Jack, stop it. You know you go 40 plus if it's the right one.
You know.
Now I'm gonna find out.
You know me, man.
You know me.
I'm not better than that, man. Take what I can get.
All right. So the population of Las Vegas is 700,000.
Okay.
So how many people in, so 700,000, wait, hold on. So if 300 million people in the United States, 700,000, 428.
This is mad math.
Yeah. So 0.23% of the population lives in Las Vegas. 0.23.
That are female between 18 and 38.
So if 32 people, what did I say? 0.23?
Yeah. 0.23.
Oh, wait.
You should have screen recorded your phone so we could put all this
so
in the video.
So it's 0.0023.
0.0023, yeah. Wait, that's not right. Hold on. No, wait, 3,200 point times 0.0023.
It's like
7
4.
People?
So we have 7.36 of you.
Yeah.
Female between the ages of 18 and 34 in Las Vegas.
What about like 21 and 25?
Oh wait. But then we have to count single. Are they single or not? So let's just say
that's not even the most important part.
We have three of you. There's three of you
that
exist.
What about between 21 and 25? That's 18 and 20 and 34.
right?
All right, so for the two of you,
track
two from that.
Just be open-minded. There's three.
There's one person out there.
And that is what?
That's all you need. That's all you need, Jack, is one.
One person.
Just get one person.
Yeah. I know nothing about it, but they're my soulmate.
But that's it. What if you meet someone from this? Imagine that.
Yeah.
You meet your soulmate from this very episode because they saw that they were the divide. Well, divide. They saw that they were the one.
They were literally.
Wow, that was nice, man.
What? That's seriously, good. You found the one.
Yeah,
the
1.226667.
So there's 0.26 in there. Whatever. Anyway, we'll link to your Instagram down below in the description. Slide in the DMs if you are the one. Please, come on, what are the chances that we got one?
One.
We got one.
You just did weird math to get to one.
No.
We were at three and you just divided by something.
No, because we are at 7.something%. I divided by half, assuming half are in relationships.
Yeah,
we got to three. Then we got to three, and then we're saying, if it's between the ages of 18 and 25, and I just divided by three because the majority are between the ages of 24 and 34, 25 and 34. So roughly, there is one.
Roughly one.
Statistically, there's
plus one. Plus or minus one, so yep. It could be zero.
So, Jack, we're going to have your Instagram and everything else linked down there. And, Alex, we're going to have your pre-wedding tickets down there. Pre-register for the wedding.
Oh, man.
You know what? I actually did get a few.
If you want to
pre-sign up for the pre-sale, just go ahead and message me on Instagram. Yeah.
All right, guys. So, with that said, thank you so much for watching, and until next time.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.